Hello, everybody. You're listening to the Sunday Sermon Podcast for Sunday, the 22nd of January, 2017. Well, you're all very welcome back to the podcast. Here we are, baby. We're in our 40s now. So we've got quite a few episodes made, quite a few lives changed. And the time has never been better for me to announce that I am now available to do sponsorships. That's right. If you listen to the first few episodes, you know that I was mostly sponsored by sports cars. But this week's sponsor is the Element Gold. That's right, gold. You know it from your periodic tables and from coveting it in your neighbors' houses. Gold. Don't you want gold? Gold. So, there you go. That's the ad done up the front. I don't think it took too much away from the show. I think the integrity of the show is still there. And we'll be doing a few more of those. If you would like to advertise on the show, on the podcast, just let me know. The advertising, it's not limited to just the podcast. I will also do it during Mass. So it's been a big week for me and my best friend Mick, Michael Lowry. It seems that Mick is in the running to be an ambassador for El Trumparoonie. That is to say, Trump, very cleverly, in an unprecedented move, he's called back all the previous ambassadors. And usually there's, when they're called back from one administration, there'll be some more ready to go over. Not this time! He's playing his, playing very close to his chest. I just want you to know, if I were a betting man, and some of you might know that I do like a flutter every now and again. Occasionally go down sort of dark roads. I go into fortune tellers, spending every penny I got, and then dipping into the money that might belong to me into the big pin, trying to reimburse it all. But sort of if the fortune teller doesn't know who's going to win the horsey race, who does? But anyway, if you are a betting person, bet on Mick to be the new ambassador. At the moment, it looks like it might be France, it might be England. Ghana was mentioned, wouldn't be too bad. He's got some, we both worked there a little bit. Moscow earlier on, as I mentioned, myself and Mick, we cornered the market on double-sided mirrors that looked like windows, but you can actually snoop in and have a look at what's going on. People think, oh, it's just a mirror. I'll do my face and that. I'll do my makeup, but no, you're being watched. So, very exciting news from Mick. It's been all go this week. So, with all that in mind, let us run sprinting, jumping over the hurdle into this week's sermon. Please be seated. Now, by now, you've all heard about my huge success over in America. I was in charge of organising the musical acts for the inauguration, and the concert has been declared by many as the greatest ever put on. Everybody was there. Three Doors Down were there. But I could go on all day, but we'd have no time for this, the sermon. But anyway, it was the night before the inauguration. I just finally got off the phone with Three Doors Down manager. She was crying, but we did eventually settle on a deal. Michael Lowry, Mick, my best friend, he was up in the old, he was up in the hotel making adjustments. They're trying to refurbish Air Force Ein, and he was there. He's palling around with a few of the ambassadors. It's going to be Martin Screlly, Charles Manson, Pinhead from Hellraiser, Bernie Madoff, Pennywise the Clown from the film It, the book It, Michael Flatley, Robert Durst, Fred Durst, their son clone Rob Fred Durst. They're all there. They're just kicking back, knocking back a few drinks, watching B-movie and writing the inauguration speech. Well, I was in the next room. I had to, with this Three Doors Down thing all organised finally, I was next door unwinding, playing bridge with the meathead who screamed, "Go and make my burrito," during the footage. When all of a sudden I get a call from John Voight, who was meant to be emceeing the inauguration. He rings up, he says, "Quig," it's John with no H, "I'm out." "But what in the name of a anaconda and the last Harry Potter film are you on about? You've got to do it. If not you, who?" He said, "Well, the figure just isn't looking right to me. I don't want to do it." I said, "Is there anyone in your family who could do it at all?" Because the first thing I was told, if they're playing hardball with the negotiations, drop them, get somebody else. It was very much the Rob Peter to pay Paul economics that has made Trump the most successful businessman in the history of business. Who's better than him, baby? Cleopatra, maybe? And even just, you know, and then she worshipped cats, whereas he doesn't worship anything at all. He actively does not think there is anything better than him or bigger than him. And that's why we all love him so much. But anyway, I said, "What are you going to do, boys? We've got to get someone in here. Could you send someone in, anyone in your family?" He said, "Look, I can't get anyone in my family. My brothers, you know, is in the Trogs. They wrote that song Wild Thing, so they're too busy. He can't do that. They're playing, everyone loves that song. They're playing it every day of the year. And he's sick of it, but it brings so much joy, he can't stop doing it. It's a sickness, it's an addiction." I said, "What about Angelina? Would she do it?" I said, "No, not her cup of tea, this sort of thing at all. She wants nothing to do with it at all." I said, "What about Angelina's brother, the weird guy who they kissed on the lips a few months ago, or years ago it was, but it might even be 15 years ago when it happened. I don't really remember, but I do recall Angelina and her brother sharing a smooch, and there being a picture taken of it, and everyone saying, 'Are they having a romance?' And that reflecting very poorly on John Voight, who, in the scandal around all of this, had to return his world's greatest dad mug that he had bought it for himself, but still, hollow victory, because as you know, his kids didn't talk to him for a few years because he's meant to be, their words, not mine, a fucking psycho. But sure, here, I'm digressing all over the place. I said, "Can the son do it?" They said, "No, the son, he can't do it. He's too busy being chief roadie for the Trogs." And I said, "What am I going to do at all?" And the meathead who screamed, "Go and make my burrito and build my wall," said, "Why can't I do it?" And I said, "Jesus, do you know what? I think people might like him. I think that he seems to be the voice of America. He's just a regular Joe, a 6'4", absolute ball of rage and testosterone. And he looks like he might be a fan of the old Cocoa Leaf. I don't mean lovely, refreshing Coca-Cola. No, baby, I mean that one that makes you go sniff, sniff, sniff. And also, he seems to be incredibly stupid. So maybe he'd be a good MC. So I know that Trump had him, after seeing the video of this young man, meathead screaming out all that stuff, "Build my wall, make me a burrito," that he'd been earmarked for the ambassadorship to Germany. I ran it by Trump. I said maybe he could be the MC. Trump should give him a shot. And I can only describe as being a My Fair Lady Pygmalion type scenario arose where I tried to teach meathead how to be John Voight. Not just John Voight. We changed the speech so it didn't have John Voight at the beginning. Didn't have all the references to the Baby Geniuses films. It was very much a page one rewrite. But that was really only where the trouble was beginning, because I had to try and teach Meathead. I had to try and teach him how to walk with shoes on. I had to try and teach him how to talk. He couldn't read, so that was not going to happen. But I thought, if I can get him to string together one coherent sentence, my work here is done. And needless to say, I could not get my work done because the man was just subnormal. Just to give you an example, if he was walking and he blinked, he would swivel violently to the right or left, smashing into the closest wall, which he would then call an N-word. This is the type of person we're dealing with. A man who walks into walls and blames other people. I know that there's, you know, Roddy Doyle, of course. He wrote a book, The Woman Who Walked Into Walls. Well, Woman Who Walked Into Doors, and that was a reference to her her husband. It was a violent relationship she was in. That was the excuse she was giving for her husband being violent towards her, was that she'd walked into doors. This lad actually walked really quickly into walls. I've never quite seen it before. Imagine someone just walking a straight line and then taking a sharp right and going straight into a wall just because they blink. Because he thought it had gone dark, he thought he was blind, and he thought, I don't want to keep living if I'm blind because I've got so many great things to see. I haven't seen, for example, The Pusher Trilogy by Nicholas Refn, the director of Drive. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see what it's like being a drug dealer in Denmark. I want to see those movies. No, if a life without eyes is not one I want to live, I'm getting out of it now. I'm going to walk into this wall. At least that's what I believed he was doing on kind of, you know, some sort of psychological level. But this lad didn't have too much psychology to him. So anyway, long story short, I ring back up John Voight and I say, John, you have us over a barrel, name your price. He said, quick, I don't want much. I just want taxi fare to Washington City from my home in Hollywood City. And I said, okay, we could do that. He said, not only that, I want a golden taxi. I'll be allowed to keep after his memento. I said, okay, we'll get on that. And one more thing, Quig. I want a H added to my name retroactively in all my films or in print forever. And to that, I had to say, I'll see what I can do. But he ended up saying he'd do it. We don't actually have to do anything now, really, because he really, if he was smart at all, he would have asked for stuff up front. It was really a fantastic, just beautiful, beautiful affair. And just how fitting that the 45th President of the United States be introduced by a lanky thicko who came to public prominence for playing a male prostitute who was so picky he wouldn't even do hand stuff in a cinema, which is really, in essence, what being a prostitute is all about. John, he did a great job. And the only downside at all was when we were leading him off the stage and Meathead walked over wearing his university gown, getting ready to do the speech, and I had to break the news to him that Voight was back. And Meathead did not take too kindly to that at all. John Voight was in a stable condition, but really with his job done, if you're to die right now, he goes straight up to heaven. I saw my young friend Spencer, who is a quote-unquote alt-right Nazi, just because he gets a haircut. I mean, does that mean that somebody who shaves off all of their head and wears braces is some sort of, you know, skinhead? Not for me to say. But Spencer, he's a good egg. So it was very sad to see him get punched because, you know, sure, his hair did flop back in a very pleasingly comical fashion, but the left advocating violence? I think that's a bit hypocritical because they're saying that the right are evil and that they're nice, but you'd never in a film or a book have a situation where the bad person gets hit by the good person. No. They'd stop being the good person. They'd cease to be the moral standard. And I mean, look at World War II. There's a reason why Churchill and Hitler were never in the same room together the whole time during World War II. And it was because of this. If Churchill, who had a bit of a temper and liked to drink, if he had hit Hitler, who was a lovely, nice sort of a gentle fellow who didn't drink and just took loads and loads of drugs, if Churchill had hit Hitler, the whole of World War II would have been over there and then, because Churchill's own security detail would have had no choice left but to imprison their prime minister for the crime of being rude. And really, once you are guilty of that crime, all bets are off. And even though he was the prime minister, had Churchill punched Hitler, he would have gotten the chair. A lot of you are wondering if I'm going to say anything about the Women's March, and yes, here it goes, baby. First they came for our jobs, and I said nothing, not priests. Women can't be priests, never going to happen. It'd be easier to make a crown out of ketchup. No, then they came for our laws. They're trying to get laws made so they can get equal pay. That's not going to happen anytime soon, but let them go have a go at it. It's a bit like when a child goes up to an adult and pretends to shoot them with a gun, and the adult pretends to get shot. It's a bit like that with these women demanding equal rights. Now they're coming after our months, and to this I say, no more. That's right, Women's March. They're trying to have their own calendar independent of men. They're starting it very slowly, just 1 month March, but it's enough. It's part of a global conspiracy to disenfranchise the Gregorian calendar and men and make us all lame. So, no doubt across the world right now, there's ladies, nasty ladies, late for brunches after yesterday's march, and they're ringing up the restaurant and saying, "I'm a nasty woman and I'm empowered as all f. So do what I say. I'm going to be 5 minutes late. And if my friends there tell her I'm going to be a little bit late, and I'm sorry, I just have the alarm went off a bit late this morning." And look, you talk to any of these nasty, quote unquote, nasty men, they just like offensive humor. They like Eminem. They like South Park. They don't get it 100%, but that's what they like. But they're all the time shouting, "It's time to take the red pill, lads, like in the Matrix. It's time to wake up to all these bloody women. It's time to take the red pill." That's reference once again to the Matrix, which is written by the Wachowski brothers, huh? These bios are Gamergate to the bone. And that's why we have to follow in the footsteps of the Wachowski brothers, two fine, upstanding, leather-wearing, head-banging, stop that now, F everything, but let's remember to pay our taxes, and make women sad. We need to all follow in their we need to follow in their footsteps, because the only way we're going to stop women from getting March is if we give them, if we get in February, not as many days in it. But then they might say, "Well, our February's going to have 29 days in it, and then 30 days, and then 31, 32, and before you know it, it'll be a year full of Februarys." So, men, rise up as one, and I want you all to symbolically rip March. If you have a calendar, I want you to rip March out of it, because it doesn't belong to you anymore. It belongs to the women. Well, they can have that month, but we're keeping the other 11. And if they think they're going to, if they think they're getting July, well, they're absolutely joking. That's it for this week's sermon. Please, if you've got like-minded friends who are seeking the truth, seeking the path, please tell them about this podcast. And meantime, God bless you, God bless me, and please rise for the homily.
You've been listening to the Sunday Sermon Podcast by Giles Brody. You can follow me on Twitter at Giles Brody. Special thanks to Conor O'Toole, Emma Keaveney, and Jeremy O'Brien.